Some people with chronic fatigue syndrome say they're being denied personal insurance, income insurance, because insurers deem it to be a mental health issue, not a biomedical issue. Myalgic encephalomyelitis, chronic fatigue syndrome, or MECFS, is a post-viral condition causing mild symptoms in some while leaving others unable to work and even confined to their beds. The ME Society, which represents people with the condition, says it knows of at least three cases where insurers have denied cover or denied payment on the basis there was a mental health factor. Otago University Emeritus Professor Warren Tate says there is overwhelming evidence that ME-CFS is not a psychological issue, but is post-viral. He is working on having it reclassified as a biomedical illness that involves an immune system dysfunction. More recently, he and other researchers are focusing on the similarities between ME-CFS and another potentially debilitating post-viral condition, long COVID. We'll hear from Professor Tate shortly. But first, let's hear from a person with ME-CFS whom we've agreed not to name and whose insurance claim, income insurance, income protection cover claim, has been denied. Good morning. Thanks for your time.
Kia ora, Catherine.
Could you explain, please, what happened to you and this case?
Sure. So I became quite unwell about 18 months ago with COVID, and since then been sort of experiencing some extreme fatigue and pain. And then I did get diagnosed with chronic fatigue syndrome, or ME, applied for a claim with my insurance company. And unfortunately, they did decline it because the diagnosis of chronic fatigue syndrome, there was a claim. They declined it because the criteria included that, and I can read out the claim if you like, no claim will be payable as a direct or indirect consequence of any mental health disorders, including anxiety, depression, stress, adjustment disorders, emotional or behavioral disorders, and disorders related to fatigue, including pain syndromes, chronic fatigue syndrome, drug and alcohol abuse, psychosomatic disorders, and or complications thereof. Yeah.
So you're reading that as coming under the umbrella of mental health disorders that they're listing?
Yes.
Were they also specific to you, to your case, in saying that this matter was linked to anxiety?
Yes, yeah, they did. They sort of picked out several doctor visits that included any of those words, stress or anxiety, and declined it on that basis.
And did they directly say to you they believed that stress and or anxiety could be a trigger or a factor in ME-CFS coming on?
Yes.
They were specific in saying that?
Yes, they were.
Okay.
They said I was at risk. And even though now I've been diagnosed more officially as long COVID, they're still declining my disability and income protection.
So at the time you applied to access cover, had you got that ME diagnosis, the original ME diagnosis?
When I put in the claim or when I applied?
Yes, when you put in the claim. You had that first diagnosis. Okay.
Yeah, I did. From a specialist.
In your communication with them, they were explicit that they saw the anxiety as a risk factor for ME-CFS and were declining cover. Okay. Was there a suggestion of non-disclosure? Was that relevant, or was it simply declined on the basis that they believed that this was caused by something you hadn't disclosed?
Yes, so there was, they picked out one incident in particular after that I, sort of forgot about. I've disclosed previous, when I took out the cover that I'd had some previous anxiety issues, but then they picked out one particular event between two dates that when I went to see my doctor, feeling quite stressed with a young baby after my first child who wasn't feeding, and I was feeling quite worried about that. She got the tongue tie operation, and then she was feeding, and then I was fine. But yeah, that's what they sort of specifically picked out as the non-disclosure. So,
So you had disclosed at the time you took out your policy that you'd had some anxiety issues, along with, a large proportion of the country. So that's the point that
yes.
counts, doesn't it? That's the point that counts is when you take the policy out, not what happens after you've taken the policy out.
Yeah, they've been quite nitpicky with that. And I think even including that term stress, I mean, that rules out most of the population, right?
Look, this is a whole the matter of non-disclosure and what a prudent insurer needs to be told is a whole different show that we'll be coming back to shortly. But the thing is, they've been specific in saying that they believed anxiety was a risk factor for ME/CFS. Okay. Interestingly, we went to your insurer, among others, and asked them whether or not they specifically excluded ME/CFS and/or long COVID. And I'll just read to you what they've told us. So we approached Partners Life, the insurer, and asked their position on accepting claims for ME/CFS and long COVID. Their statement says, in part, "With regards to your direct query on whether our policies allow for these conditions to be accepted, the answer is absolutely yes. These conditions are not explicitly excluded from our insurance covers by default, and assuming these conditions first arrive following the commencement of the policy and the claimable conditions for the pertinent cover are met, these conditions absolutely could bring rise to an acceptable claim." They then go on to say, "Where the signs and symptoms of any condition occur prior to the commencement of a policy of insurance, regardless of whether a formal diagnosis has yet been reached, these factors are required to be disclosed by the applicant during the application process." And they talk to the issue of pre-existing conditions. But what you read out earlier seemed to very specifically exclude ME/CFS entirely, did it not?
Well, it uses the words chronic fatigue syndrome.
Right. No claim will be payable as a direct or indirect consequence of any mental health disorders, disorders related to fatigue, including pain syndromes, chronic fatigue syndrome. So those two things don't add up, do they?
No.
What was involved
I'll be
in
them again, I think.
Yeah, well, maybe you should. What was involved in trying to get this resolved? How much effort and time went into trying to get them to cover or to pay out on the claim?
A long battle. I think it's taken since I became unwell. I put in the claim after I got my diagnosis, so that was June 2023. And I've gone backwards and forwards, and I've sent them information, I've sent them evidence, I've gone back to the research. They sent me research, which was outdated. I've even updated them with, that my diagnosis is due to long COVID. And yeah, it's still ongoing. I've been through several complaints processes as well. Yeah.
I know the toll even this interview will take on someone with a post-viral condition. And so thank you very much for the generosity of it. But you've done all this research. You've backed and forth to the company. What sort of research did they send you? Was this specific to their position that anxiety could be a risk factor?
I think they sent research that was outdated and has since been, proven wrong.
Discredited, right.
Yeah,
but this was still relatively recently that, that this was provided to you.
Yeah, so that was just last year, late last year, yeah.
Is there any other process left to you at this stage in trying to get them to reverse their position and take account?
No, not really. They sort of stopped communicating with me, and unless I lobby or get them to change their criteria, but I cannot, I don't have the power to take on an insurance company or the energy, to be honest. So feeling a little despondent, I guess.
From your contact with other organisations and advocates, do you believe you are far from alone?
Absolutely. Yes, I know of other people that are having the same issues. And yeah, I do want to say that ANZMIS and Chronic Complex Illness Support have been great support for me.
There's obviously a financial cost to this. One imagines in not receiving the cover for which you had paid for how long, by the way?
About 10 years I've been paying. The financial burden has been huge. I've paid for all my own specialists, medical appointments and equipment, wheelchairs. I can't work. And all that money could have been going back to our business or family or future. You know, it doesn't seem fair.
I thank you very much for your time and for sharing. And as I said, I do appreciate this would have taken its own toll. So thank you.
Yeah.
It is our guest, as we said, the ME Society, which represents people with the condition. Our guest now, the latest diagnosis she's had is actually long COVID. We'll talk more about their similarities in a moment. But the ME Society, which represents people with the condition, says it knows of at least three cases where insurers have denied cover on the basis there was a mental health factor. Well, what does the research say? What does the science say? Professor Warren Tates, Professor Emeritus at the University of Otago, Professor of Biochemistry, he is. And we've spoken previously about this condition and about long COVID. Good morning, Warren.
Maureen, Catherine, happy to be part of your program again, and particularly on this issue, which I've been consulted about by a number of patients myself. So I have some quite strong feelings about it.
Do you believe there's a good number of people in the same situation?
Well, certainly I've had three or four directly. I've even had someone come down to Dunedin to see me to talk about their particular condition, and I can sort of give a little bit more information about that, you know, if you wish. But the critical thing to me is, you know, just putting the science aside, it seems incredible that insurance companies that offer income replacement insurance to cope with an unfortunate medical event and getting ME/CFS or getting long COVID is such an event that does not allow a person to work, that this kind of confusing language and conflicting language that you've just you know, alluded to in that interview, it's just incredible to me that the insurance companies don't honour what they've offered. In this case, the person said, I think she'd been paying into the scheme for 10 years. So I find that incredible.
Let's get to this point, though, that they seem to be listing this as or making the claim that they believe anxiety could be a risk factor. Is there evidence for that?
Well, what we know about long COVID and ME/CFS, they're post-viral conditions, ME/CFS mainly post-viral, they have over 200 symptoms each associated with them. So both of them have a similar set of core symptoms, and then individual patients have a number of other symptoms among the 200 that have been reported. Now, some patients, as a consequence of their long COVID or ME/CFS, can have anxiety. But many don't. Some patients can have depression, but many don't. So these things are consequences of the illness. They're not the cause of the illness. long COVID and ME/CFS are not depressive or anxiety disorders. So the thinking is around the wrong way. So if someone reports anxiety as a result of their condition, that isn't necessarily so surprising, but it's not universal. It's just a consequence of the large number of symptoms that these patients can actually experience.
What is the history of ME/CFS, or let's use the phrase that the insurer used, chronic fatigue syndrome, being regarded as a psychological condition?
So it started in the United Kingdom in the 1980s when a very prominent psychiatrist, Sir Simon Wesley, who was became president of the Royal Society of Psychiatry. He was a highly influential person. He was working on ME and decided that it was a perception disorder. That is to say, people had some physical symptoms and they thought about them too deeply and imagined they were debilitating, so therefore they couldn't work. And it was like an opting out of life symptom. So his ideas spread through clinicians in the United Kingdom. And so patients, you know, were treated as though they had a psychological illness. So that became a psychological paradigm. Now, many patients and their families realized this wasn't the case. And as a coming from an ME/CFS family, I understand this, you know. In New Zealand, at the time my daughter was had her illness, the default position was psychological or psychiatric, just because blood screens would show nothing. So patients became very angry in families in the United States. In fact, Simon Wesley got threats to his life and had to give up his research in the first decade of this century. But what followed was what's called the PACE trial, where people that were believing in this conducted a trial that aggressive cognitive behavioral therapy and graded exercise therapy were the best treatments. And they published in 2011. And there was a huge reaction to this again from patients because they knew that exercise was one of the things which made their illness worse. In fact, now we have post-exertional malaise as a core symptom of both ME/CFS and long COVID. And that's brought on by activity, which can be physical exercise, or it can be mental exercise or emotional stress. So we know that. So in fact, biostatisticians started to look at the claim results of the PACE trial, and it was completely discredited. In fact, a whole journal was published in 2017 that just countered this whole psychological paradigm for these illnesses. And it was interesting, I went to a conference in 2016 in Florida, where a UK science journalist got up and very angrily spoke about this and then took out a copy of the manuscript of the PACE trial and a lighter and set it alight. And I thought, my God, this is a book burning. But that was the extent of anger which people had at the time.
Warren, where are we at now in establishing, through your research and others, actual biomedical markers, biomarkers, and evidence for it as a physical, not a psychological or psychosomatic condition?
Yeah. So I started work in 2012, just about the time the PACE trial came out, and my aim was simply to study the molecular biology of New Zealand patients and ask whether I could find some evidence that this was a physiological disease. And I found hundreds of changes in the molecules of proteins and RNA and also features of the DNA, which clearly could underpin the dysfunctional physiology. So biological signatures in the immune cell proteins and also in the light switches or the regulator switches in the DNA which affected the expression of genes. So this to me was unequivocal evidence of the physiological basis of the condition. We've published now quite extensively on that. Interestingly enough, just in February this year, there was the culmination of an 8-year multi-million dollar NIH study that's been published in Nature Communications amid a blaze of publicity. And they, in the end, narrowed their patient group down to only 17 patients, but looked at them in depth. And the media kind of response to this was landmark study confirms CFS is unambiguously biological. So CFS being the American name, original name, you know, for ME CFS. So
the question now is, though, when that makes its way through to medical colleges accepting this, because the insurer's going to likely wait for the compelling, incontrovertible evidence, are they not? For example, this person says the root problem behind this is the persisting false belief that these illnesses are psychosomatic. The weight of evidence clearly discredits this. I'm a patient with over a decade's experience of this incorrect belief. It causes real harm. Influential doctors in New Zealand still push this view of ME in med schools, training, conferences. This has to change. And another correspondent who's written in, Warren, says, I've had ME for many years. I always feel embarrassed when my GP has to sign the WINS medical certificate and ticks CFS under the psychological psychiatric conditions part of the form. So where are we at in the medical colleges and or others recognising the evidence?
I think most clinicians recognise the evidence now that this is a physiological illness. I mean, long COVID has shown this. I mean, 65 million people in the world have got this post-viral condition, haven't got the COVID virus. This is now on everybody's face. The trouble is that sub-disciplines of medicine tend to think about their own speciality when getting a diagnosis. So insurance companies still in New Zealand are getting patients to go to psychiatrists and maybe occupational clinicians to get a diagnosis. And within their discipline, they're looking at this and they're coming up with a somatic symptom disorder. This is the psychological definition. Now, it is hard for me to understand if anyone's been listening to the news and whatever and following the worldwide publicity about COVID and long COVID that they can still come up with that definition. But there's still this sort of siloing. So I think it's a small grouping of people that still hold on to this, but they can still be influential. And in the United Kingdom, there's been a constant battle, you know, since all of the controversy, because the National Institute of Health and Care Excellence there changed their guidelines away from the psychological paradigm, saying now that cognitive behavioral therapy, aggressive and graded exercise therapy are not the preferred treatments for ME/CFS and long COVID, and they could do harm, and this is the basis that exercise can do harm. And there's been a huge fight back on that to try and get them reversed again in the UK. So we're seeing in the UK a kind of a constant battle going on. In New Zealand, it's a much more reduced one, but there's still pockets of people that believe.
Well, are there guidelines for treatment? And, you know, they're radically different prescriptions, aren't they, depending on how you view this illness? But are there any official guidelines for treatment anywhere?
Well, yes. The Mayo Clinic proceedings had a conference for the top ME/CFS clinicians in the United States in 2021, and 20 of those wrote a best management practice for ME/CFS. So that is evidence-based best practice for handling ME/CFS. You know, we've been fortunate, as you know, to have had an outstanding ME/CFS clinician in this country who understood all of this and in her own practice, you know, which was a totally devoted to ME/CFS, you know, applied these principles. So, but we don't have any national guidelines, and I give a lecture each year to third-year medical students in Dunedin, and I talk about this. And, you know, I just yearn that our medical schools both taught a sort of a consistent evidence
Yeah.
base and on.
And the colleges perhaps have to step up too, Warren. Thank you. But one final point, because another company we spoke to, we invited several to tell us their policies. Very difficult to actually see exclusions on websites or get any details of policies on websites. But from AIA, we heard AIA NZ has no specific company policy with respect to ME/CFS and/or long COVID. We treat it like any other medical condition. However, it does go on to say the statement, where there is a disclosed medical history of ME/CFS and/or long COVID at time of policy purchase, then our underwriting process, case-by-case basis, would seek to manage that. This might include exclusion for some types of insurance, e.g. health income protection. Now, having an exclusion is one thing, but in the case of our guest earlier, is there any way that company can argue that anxiety was a genuine risk factor for the ME/CFS and then long COVID she was diagnosed with years after taking that policy out? Is there any way they can argue that?
I know of no evidence-based, you know, around the world, really, from the top clinicians, which would say that anxiety, you know, is a factor which could cause ME/CFS or long COVID. I mean, no.
All right, just having a look here. This listener's texted in. I have cover with Partners Life. I'm currently receiving a monthly benefit of mortgage repayment following my claim for ME/CFS long COVID. I was initially declined using exactly the same criteria as your guest. It is a mental health exclusion because I was on a low dose antidepressant. I'm extremely unfortunate that my broker went into bat for me, and after a 6 month fight, my claim was accepted. Insurance companies need to catch up with the current medical knowledge. It is extremely distressing to have your very real illness minimised or even dismissed at a time, of course, thank you for that email, at a time, of course, when you're already under considerable stress. Thank you very much, Warren Tate. Thanks for all your feedback, listeners. It's still coming in. And thanks also to Partners Life for giving us that generic policy position. Also to AIA, who also replied to our request for information. We'd welcome to speak to the insurers, actually, if they want to come on and talk about why they continue to regard this as a mental health or a psychosomatic issue. We'd welcome the chance to talk that through.